content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Beth Yoder for the North Carolina Reading Service, and welcome to Flavor. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from ScienceDaily.com, Food Network Magazine, March 2021 issue, and an article from CNBC.com. March is St. Patrick's Day month. This article from Food Network Magazine, Irish to the Core. In honor of St. Patrick's Day, Chef Gemma Stafford shares a recipe for a traditional Irish apple cake. When Gemma Stafford was growing up in Ireland, her mom always had a cake or crumble on hand just in case someone dropped by for a cup of tea and a chat. Like many traditional Irish desserts, her mom's weren't particularly complicated. What made them so good were ingredients like Irish butter, rhubarb from the garden, and sour apples picked from a tree near the house. In Ireland, everything is local, the chef says. When Gemma started cooking and baking professionally, she became known for over-the-top treats like birthday pound cake and peanut butter fudge ice cream pie. You can check out her recipes at biggerbolderbaking.com. But she still loves a simple classic dessert like this one from her mom. It's a humble cake, but it yields a big reward, she says. A lot of Irish recipes are like that. Irish apple cake. For the streusel topping, 6 tablespoons of cold salted butter, plus more for the pan, 3/4 cup all-purpose flour, 1/4 cup rolled oats, 1/2 cup granulated sugar, and a pinch of salt. For the cake, 1 stick of salted butter at room temperature, 1/2 cup granulated sugar, 2 teaspoons pure vanilla extract, 2 large eggs, 1 1/4 cups all-purpose flour, 1 teaspoon baking powder, 1 teaspoon ground cinnamon, 1/8 teaspoon salt, 3 tablespoons of milk, 3 Granny Smith apples peeled and thinly sliced, and confectioner's sugar for serving. Preheat the oven to 350 degrees. Butter a 9-inch round cake pan and line the bottom with parchment paper. To make the streusel topping, in a medium bowl, combine the flour, oats, granulated sugar, and salt. Next, rub in the cold butter until fully incorporated and you've reached the texture of coarse breadcrumbs. Set aside in the fridge while you make the cake. To make the cake, cream the butter and granulated sugar in a large bowl with a mixer on medium-high speed until light and fluffy. Add the vanilla, then beat in the eggs one at a time. In a medium bowl, combine the flour, baking powder, cinnamon, and salt. Fold the dry ingredients into the wet ingredients with a rubber spatula along with the milk. Once the batter has formed, transfer it to the prepared pan and lay on the sliced apples, making sure they are arranged in one even layer. Cover the apples with all of the streusel topping. Bake the cake until the top is golden brown and crisp, 60 to 70 minutes. Remove from the oven and let cool slightly before turning out of the pan onto a rack. When ready to serve, dust the cake with confectioner's sugar. And Gemma says, I recommend using salted butter for this cake. That really That little bit of extra flavor really makes a difference. Moving on now to an article from ScienceDaily.com. Diets high in fructose could cause immune system damage, study suggests. New research by Swansea scientists in collaboration with scientists at the University of Bristol and the Francis Crick Institute in London has indicated that consuming a diet high in the sugar fructose might prevent the proper functioning of people's immune systems in ways that has, until now, largely been unknown. Fructose is commonly found in sugary drinks, sweets, and processed foods, and is used widely in food production. It is associated with obesity, type 2 diabetes, and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and its intake has increased substantially throughout the developed world in recent years. However, understanding the impact of fructose on the immune system of people who consume it in high levels has been limited until now. The new study published in the journal Nature Communications shows that fructose causes the immune system to become inflamed, and that process produces more reactive molecules, which are associated with inflammation. Inflammation of this kind can go on to damage cells and tissues and contribute to organs and body systems not working as they should and could lead to disease. The research also brings a deeper understanding about how fructose could be linked to diabetes and obesity, as low-level inflammation is often associated with obesity. It also builds on the growing body of evidence available to public health policymakers about the damaging effects of consuming high levels of fructose. Dr. Nick Jones of Swansea University's Medical School said, "Research into different components of our diet can help us understand what might contribute to inflammation and disease and what could be best harnessed to improve health and well-being." Dr. Emma Vincent in the Bristol Medical School Populational Health Sciences said, "Our study is exciting because it takes us a step further towards understanding why some diets can lead to ill health." Next up, comfort for all. Ina Garten makes the ultimate feel-good dinner, cheesy baked pasta. We're all a little cranky these days because it's cold. It gets dark early, and we've been dealing with the stress of the virus for nearly a year. Fortunately, because I have been stuck at home, I've had more time to cook than ever, and that never fails to make me feel better. Plus, I end up with a good homemade dinner, and so does everyone around me. When people ask me about my favorite comfort food, I have a hard time deciding between a big bowl of satisfying stew and a pan of cheesy baked pasta. With this baked rigatoni with lamb ragu, I don't have to choose. First, I make a rich lamb ragu, which is just like a stew. I saute onions, carrots, and fennel, then add ground lamb, tomatoes, lots of garlic, and almost an entire bottle of earthy red wine. As it simmers away on the stove for 40 minutes, the whole house smells amazing and everything starts to look up. Then I cook the rigatoni until it's al dente, drain it and toss it with the lamb ragu, lots of fresh mozzarella, and some eggs and cream to hold it together. I top it with Parmesan and mozzarella and bake it until it's hot and bubbly and the top is browned and crusty. I dare anyone to still be cranky after having this for dinner. And here's the recipe. This dish can be completely assembled a day in advance and refrigerated. Bake just before serving. Baked rigatoni with lamb ragu. 3 tablespoons of good olive oil, 1.5 cups chopped yellow onion, about 1 large, 2 cups half-inch diced carrots, about 3 large, 2 cups half-inch diced fennel cored, about 1 medium, 1 pound ground lamb, 1 tablespoon minced garlic, about 3 cloves, 1 tablespoon whole fennel seeds, roughly chopped, 2 tablespoons tomato paste, 1 28-ounce can of crushed tomatoes, such as San Marzano, 2.5 cups dry red wine, such as Chianti or Côte du Rhône, divided, 1 teaspoon dried oregano crushed with your hands, 1/4 teaspoon crushed red pepper flakes, kosher salt and freshly ground black pepper, 1 pound rigatoni, such as De Secco, 2 extra large eggs, 2/3 cup heavy cream, 1 pound fresh salted mozzarella divided, 1/2 cup freshly grated Italian Parmesan cheese. Heat the olive oil in a medium 10 to 11 inch heavy bottomed or Dutch oven, such as Le Creuset, over medium heat. Add the onion, carrots, and fennel and saute for 10 minutes, stirring occasionally until the vegetables begin to brown. Add the lamb, garlic, and fennel seeds and cook for 8 minutes, breaking up the lamb with a wooden spoon until no longer pink. Stir in the tomato paste and tomatoes, 2 cups of the wine, the oregano, red pepper flakes, 1 tablespoon salt, and 1 teaspoon black pepper. Bring to a boil, lower the heat and simmer, partly covered, for 40 minutes, stirring occasionally. Turn off the heat, stir in the remaining 1/2 cup of red wine. Preheat the oven to 350 degrees. Bring a large pot of water to a boil, add 2 tablespoons of salt and the rigatoni, and cook according to the directions on the package until barely al dente. Drain the pasta. In a large bowl, whisk together the eggs and cream. Add the rigatoni and toss well. Grate 1/2 of the mozzarella on a box grater and add it to the rigatoni mixture. Add the lamb mixture, 2 teaspoons of salt, and 1 teaspoon of black pepper, and toss well. Transfer to a 10 by 14 by 2 inch baking dish and sprinkle with the Parmesan. Slice the remaining mozzarella and arrange it on top. Bake for 40 to 45 minutes until the sauce is hot and bubbling and some of the pasta is crusty on top. Serve hot. Next up, an article from CNBC.com that was published on February 18th. It's been a little more than a year into the global COVID-19 pandemic, and there's still no credible evidence that people can catch the virus from food or food packaging, top U.S. food and health officials have said. While there have been some scientific studies that have identified COVID-19 particles on food packaging, most of that research is finding the genetic fingerprint of the virus, not live virus, that can result in human infection, according to a joint press release from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Transmission of the virus via food or food packaging is highly unlikely because the amount of virus particles that a person could theoretically pick up by touching a contaminated surface isn't enough to generate an infection via oral inhalation. Health experts around the world have reached similar conclusions, the official said, noting that international scientists are constantly learning more about the virus. Despite the billions of meals and food packages handled since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, to date there has not been any evidence that food, food packaging, or food handling is a source or important transmission route for SARS-CoV-2 resulting in COVID-19. Said a recent opinion from the International Commission on Microbiological Specifications for Foods. More than 110 million people around the world have tested positive for the coronavirus. There are several ways to transmit and contract the virus, but global health experts agree that Friday night's takeout isn't likely to be one of them. I have some dates and food news from Food Network magazine for the month of March. March 2nd is Dr. Seuss's birthday. Make green eggs and ham pizza. Top a mini pre-made crust with pesto, ham, mozzarella, and an egg. Bake at 450 degrees about 12 minutes. March 12th, the Girl Scouts came to be on this day in 1912. Make marshmallow cereal treats using a mix of chocolate cereal and crushed thin mints. March 14th is Pie Day. Make pie cookies. Cut out circles of sugar cookie dough. Press the edges with a fork and bake. Decorate like your favorite pie. March 20th is the first day of spring. Celebrate at dinner and sprinkle edible flowers on a chilled soup. March 23rd, Frozen Treat Tuesday. Layer granola, frozen yogurt, and sorbet in cups. Add popsicle sticks. Freeze, then unmold. And finally, March 31st, the Eiffel Tower was inaugurated on this day in 1889, a good excuse for French cheese. Instead of the usual brie, try some Comte, and that is spelled C-O-M-T-E. A Mediterranean-style diet is linked to better thinking skills in later life, and this article is from ScienceDaily.com. People who eat a Mediterranean-style diet, particularly one rich in green leafy vegetables and low in meat, are more likely to stay mentally sharp in later life, a study shows. Closely adhering to a Mediterranean diet was associated with higher scores on a range of memory and thinking tests among adults in their late 70s, the research found. The study found no link, however, between the Mediterranean-style diet and better brain health. Markers of healthy brain aging, such as greater gray or white matter volume or fewer white matter lesions, did not differ between those regularly eating a Mediterranean diet and those who did not. These latest findings suggest that this primarily plant-based diet may have benefits for cognitive functioning as we get older, researchers say. Researchers at the University of Edinburgh tested the thinking skills of more than 500 people aged 79 and without dementia. The participants completed tests of problem-solving, thinking speed, memory, and word knowledge, as well as a questionnaire about their eating habits during the previous year. More than 350 of the group also underwent a magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, brain scan to gain insights into their brain structure. The team used statistical models to look for associations between a person's diet and their thinking skills and brain health in later life. The findings show that, in general, people who most closely adhered to a Mediterranean diet had the highest cognitive function scores, even when accounting for childhood IQ, smoking, physical activity, and health factors. The differences were small, but statistically significant. The individual components of the diet that appeared to be most strongly associated with better thinking skills were green leafy vegetables and a lower red meat intake. Researchers say the latest findings add to the evidence that a healthier lifestyle, of which diet is one aspect, is associated with better thinking skills in later life. Dr. Jane Corley of the University of Edinburgh's School of Philosophy, Psychology, and Language Sciences said, "Eating more green leafy vegetables and cutting down on red meat might be two key food elements that contribute to the benefits of the Mediterranean-style diet. In our sample, the positive relationship between a Mediterranean diet and thinking skills is not accounted for by having a healthier brain structure as one might expect, though it's possible there may be other structural or functional brain correlates with this measure of diet or associations in specific regions of the brain rather than the whole brain as measured here." From Food Network magazine, Spilling the Beans. These days you can find a coffee shop on every other corner, but that was far from the case a few decades ago. Here's the story of how America became a cafe culture, and it starts, no surprise, with Starbucks, which opened 50 years ago this month. 1971, a Starbucks is born. A shop called Starbucks opens in Seattle on March 30th, selling bulk coffee beans, tea, spices, and home brewing equipment. You can't order a cup of coffee until the fifth location opens in 1982. 1978, Cold Spell. Cold brew arrives at PJ's Coffee in New Orleans and becomes a local specialty. The grounds are steeped in cool water, a process that likely originated in Japan. 1984, Italian influence. Inspired by Milan's espresso bars, Starbucks exec Howard Schultz tests a coffeehouse concept in Seattle. It serves the brand's first cafe latte. 1989, getting artsy. David Schomer, co-owner of Seattle's Espresso Vivace, helps introduce Americans to the wonders of latte art, a popular practice at Italian cafes. 1994, TV time. The pilot episode of Friends airs, opening with a scene in Central Perk. The fictional coffee house becomes an iconic hangout and signals that cafe culture is truly mainstream. 1995, blending in. The Starbucks Frappuccino makes its national debut. The blended drink originally comes in coffee and mocha flavors, but later becomes the base for gimmicky limited edition versions like Unicorn and Mermaid. 1999, Kraft Coffee. Stumptown Coffee Roasters opens in Portland, Oregon, and helps kickstart the artisanal third wave coffee movement. Devotees obsess over the origin of their beans and how they're roasted and brewed. 2003, spicing it up. The pumpkin spice latte arrives at Starbucks. It's flavored with cinnamon, clove, and nutmeg. Actual pumpkin puree isn't added to the recipe until 2015. 2012, coffee on draft. Borrowing techniques from the beer world, roasters at Cuvée Coffee in Austin start kegging nitrogen-infused cold brew and dispensing it from taps. 2020, how we're brewing. During the pandemic, Americans attempt to become at-home baristas. Dalgona coffee and copycat Starbucks recipe go viral, and coffee maker sales spike 28%. Finally, I have some food news for you. Scientists are saving the avocado. We don't have to imagine a world without avocado toast. The global avocado supply has long been threatened by droughts and diseases. But a horticulture PhD student in Australia recently figured out how to cryogenically freeze and preserve avocado shoots, then revive them for future generations. Junk food is getting the boot. Berkeley, California has become the first U.S. city to ban the sale of junk food within 3 feet of the registers at grocery stores. The bill, which goes into effect this month, requires shops larger than 2,500 square feet to stock checkout lanes with healthier options like fruit and nuts. Other cities could do the same. In 2014, Berkeley was the first to pass a tax on soda, and Philadelphia and Seattle followed. Your beer choice might say something about you. New research shows that IPA drinkers are more likely to be risk takers than those who prefer less bitter beers like lagers. Vegan bacon is actually happening. Bacon has long been the holy grail for fake meat producers, and the race to make a realistic plant-based version is heating up. Prime Roots has started selling bacon made from fungus called koji, and Hooray Foods recently debuted an alternative made from coconut oil, rice flour, and tapioca starch. We cooked both, and neither could fool a bacon lover, but Hooray's version looks a lot like the real thing, and it sizzles in the pan. Another big entry is still to come. Beyond Meat has reportedly been working on a plant-based bacon since at least 2019. But first, breakfast. If you down a cup of coffee before you eat anything in the morning, you might want to reconsider your routine. New research suggests that drinking black coffee before breakfast can lead to a blood sugar spike with the meal. We have run out of time for today's episode of Flavor. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you have enjoyed it. I am Mary Beth Yoder, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Flavor is available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.